Well, just strike a balance and a moderation. In other words, if you should be working for going forward in all directions, because part of even bhaktas preach and distribute books and give lectures and read Ananda Maharaj used to give the Sunday feast lecture when he was Bhakta Henry. And he was going to college at the University of Berkeley. He used to come to the temple and give a Sunday feast lecture. The idea is that you know that there's some requirements, reading requirements, and writing requirements for initiation. Right. So if you're neglecting those and not going forward in that, then that's not very good. Right. So that the priorities, if you want to list priorities are as much as possible follow the four regular principles, considering your Grihastha situation. Maybe it's not always possible. But then the other thing is chant 16 rounds without fail every day. Mm-hmm. These are the basic requirements. And then read the list of books and do the homework essence of Gita. Right. So then that's like the priority. So now after that, if there's time left, then you do preaching. Physicians, heal thyself. So it's like someone says, well, should I finish medical school first or start practicing? So you can start practicing even in the middle of medical school, but you may get arrested for quackery. I know, and you may even be quite good at what you're doing, but ultimately you should finish. And then you'll be more adept at your ability to practice and more learned and more effective, because then you have all the power from Prabhupada behind you. And the virtue of your surrender. So everything is good and everything is necessary. Preaching is also necessary. Even at every stage of the game, Prabhupada wanted everyone to preach. And his general idea was that for neophytes, uninitiated or even initiated or neophyte, they're considered to be assistants of the guru. That the preachers are actually the mahajans and the acharyas, the gurus. They're preaching and we're only assisting them. Even Prabhupada had that mood. He was the Acharya for ISKCON, the founder, but he always had the mood, I'm a humble servant of my Guru Maharaj. My Guru Maharaj has asked me to carry out, to preach this message in the Western countries, so I've come here on the order of my Guru. So I'm simply trying to please him. So he never really presented himself as a world Acharya or Jagat Guru. And this is my mission, and I want to open all these temples and print all these books and save all these people, which of course he did, or with the help of his disciples. But he always thought that I'm simply carrying out, in my own humble way, trying to carry out the order of my guru. So that's the priorities. Priorities are, get your degree. So the other thing is, especially if you have to see your time, because it's the Shastras say human life without diksha is a waste. So we should try to, if we find guru and we have faith, of course, even the Vedas, it's a kind of a combination of urgency and patience. Because they say it's very urgent to get initiated, but at the same time you have to be patient about it. Because you're supposed to examine a guru, prospective guru, for at least 1 year, and even up to 3 years, it says in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hearing and serving and questioning and seeing how your progress is. And measure your progress, see how it's going, and then make some decision. So it's urgent in the sense that we should be initiated at the earliest, but at the same time it has to be carefully and cautiously done with proper discrimination and examination. I always say that's our motto. Always be a teacher and always be a student. Because one is always a teacher, and one is always a student, can always be a teacher. Because he's always learning new things. Otherwise, he runs out of things to teach. he taught up all the things he learned. So then he becomes hackneyed and old, fifth grade class. You can imagine these grammar school teachers. I've been teaching for 30 years, fifth grade mathematics. I mean, unbelievable people can be so locked into such a ridiculous occupation.
So,
yeah, it's a matter of where we place our identity. Because ego is a servant, the mind is a servant of the ego. So the mind functions in sankalpa vikalpa, accepting and rejecting on the basis of the identity. So when we falsely identify with the body, that's false ego, ahankar. Mm-hmm. So then we accept and reject things in relation to our body. We accept things that give pleasure to our senses and body, and we reject the things that displease our senses and our body. So that's the misconception, because of the misidentification, then the mind is misfiring. Mm-hmm. The mind is not firing correctly, so it's uncontrolled. Mm-hmm. Because there's unlimited material objects for the material senses to be engaged in. But when the ego is correctly adjusted, and pure ego, pure identity is there, pure identity is that I am Krishna Das. Das, das, anadas. I'm a servant of Krishna. So when we adjust the ego correctly and get the ego in focus, then the mind only has one thing to accept and one thing to reject. Accept everything that's favorable for Krishna's service and reject everything that's unfavorable. This is Sharanagati. So when we surrender our mind to our higher conception of our identity, the spiritual reality of our true self is Krishna's eternal servant. Jivara Surapaya Krishna Nitya Das. And then the mind becomes controlled, because it's easy when you only have two things to do. But when the mind doesn't have a proper identity, when it identifies with the body has a million things to do. Mm-hmm. A million ideas for the eyes, and a million ideas for the nose, and a million ideas for the skin. But the soul only has one idea, how to please Krishna, basically. How to please Krishna, how to serve Krishna. And everything is connected to that one desire. There's only one desire. The soul, the original pure condition of the soul is one desire. I desire whatever Krishna is. I'm one with, that's oneness. Oneness with the desire of Krishna. Krishna wants our love and service, and we want to offer our love and service to Krishna. He's the one object of our activities, and our meditation, and our hankering, and our desiring. So it simplifies things. Pure identity simplifies our life. That's why Prabhupada said simple living, high thinking. So that high thinking means correct identity. That's the highest thought possible. Highest conception is called the Krishna conception of reality. That Krishna is God, He's supreme, and I'm finite, and He's infinite. And I'm intended and meant to serve Him eternally. And everything else is drama. Everything else is an imposition. As Prabhupada said in his Hare Krishna address, the chanting of Hare Krishna is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It springs automatically from the spiritual platform. It's such a nice, I used to listen to that over and over again. And Prabhupada's japa tape. The transcendental vibration established by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, it's a sublime method for reviving our transcendental consciousness. As living spiritual souls, we are all originally Krishna conscious entities. But due to our association with matter from time immemorial, our consciousness is now adulterated by material atmosphere. We are trying to exploit the resources of material nature, but actually we are becoming more and more entangled in her complexities. Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. This consciousness is the original natural energy of the living entity. When we hear the transcendental vibration, this consciousness is revived. This simplest method of meditation is recommended for this age. By practical experience also, one can perceive that by chanting this Maha Mantra, or the great chanting for deliverance, one can at once feel a transcendental ecstasy coming through the spiritual stratum. In the material concept of life, we are busy in the matter of sense gratification, as if we were in the lower animal stage. It goes like this. And when one is factually on the plane of spiritual understanding, surpassing the stages of sense, mind, and intelligence, he is then on the transcendental plane. This chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is enacted from the spiritual platform, and thus this sound vibration surpasses all lower strata of consciousness, namely sensual, mental, intellectual. There is no need to understand the language of the mantra, nor is there any need for mental speculation or any intellectual adjustment for chanting this mantra. It is automatic from the spiritual platform, and as such, anyone can take part in vibrating this transcendental sound without any previous qualification. In the more advanced stage, of course, one is not expected to commit offenses on grounds of spiritual understanding. These three words, Hara, Krishna, and Rama, because that's on the tape, are the transcendental seeds of the Maha Mantra. The chanting is a spiritual call for the Lord and His energy to give protection to the conditioned soul. This chanting is exactly like the genuine cry of a child for its mother's presence. Mother Hara helps the devotee achieve the father's grace, and then Lord Krishna reveals himself to the devotee who chants this mantra sincerely. No other means of spiritual realization is as effective in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy as the Maha Mantra. So this is it. So the mind, Krishna says in Gita, the mind can be your best friend or your worst enemy. So when your mind is thinking of ways to serve Krishna and please Krishna, then he's your best friend. But if he's hovering over the field of sense gratification, then he's your worst enemy. So the way we control our mind is to engage in service and then be absorbed in the service. So chanting Hare Krishna is also service. So then there are different means to be absorbed in the process of chanting Hare Krishna, which is the substance of my book. Meditation on the meaning of the holy name, mantra artha chintata, rup dhyan, meditate on the form of Krishna, meditate on the guna dhyan, the qualities of Krishna. Just try to hear, chant louder if the mind is making noise, then chant louder. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama. Chant faster, chant louder.
Sometimes it's not even thinking sense gratification, but it's thinking of ways to serve, or ways to, like, if I have somebody.
Yeah, well, that's also inattentive.
Yeah, how to engage somebody.
It's not because the mind, it means we're not hearing.
Yeah.
We're just, it's background. It's just mood music. Mm-hmm. Whatever they call it. Whatever they call it in those shopping malls. Was that mood music? What do they call it? It's called ambience. Mood music to create a happy buying consumer mood. So you buy more and more and more useless items.
In the Bhagavad Gita, not any specific shloka, but talks about duties and dharma that we have to follow, and dharma is telling.
Well, yeah, but that's in the beginning, and then at the end he says, forget it.
Right, but then one side we're all shudras in Kali Yuga, and then only by qualification we can become a brahmana. But ultimately we're all servants of God. So no matter, does it matter then what we're in ashram, or we're not concerned with that? Because when I'm telling these people about the second
chapter, Janmana Jayate Shudra.
We're all shudras.
Yeah, by guna and karma, you may be a Brahmin birth or kshatriya, but what Brahmin smokes cigarettes and eats onions and garlic and watches blue movies and that, what kind of Brahmin is that? So it's a Brahmin in name only. My father's a high court judge and so am I. Acha? Do you go to college? No. But do you have any law degree? No. But no, I'm born in this family. My father is a prime minister of India, so am I. Acha?
Would Krishna tell Arjuna to do his duty according to religious principles? And he says, then you'll rise to the platform of Gyan.
Yes. Karma leads to Gyan.
Right. And then when devotion you can get liberation.
You get, yeah, but bhakti, but bhakti is higher. If you take up bhakti, right, then you supersede karma again.
No, so in the process of explaining what I'm telling all these ladies, then religious principles, he's asking him to follow the Kshatriya Dharma because Arjuna was a Kshatriya. So, as it applies to us, then we have to follow our...
No, contextual. Because you have to, you know, you can't just, it's like, you know, there's some surgery in a hospital, and then you come in the middle and say, oh, what, this guy's all cut up. But you have to come in at the end and see the whole finished product. Mm-hmm. And then they show you what they took out of the guy. See, we took his tumor out and they put in some formaldehyde and you can study.
Yeah, so this is just the beginning of
this. This is just the beginning. Actually, what Krishna is teaching is Prem Dharma, yeah. Sanatan Dharma.
Right.
The Dharma is for one, it's the same for everybody. Just like Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Shiksha, he even rejected Sarvadharma Pratyaja. And Madhyalila chapter 8 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Shiksha. Mm. He keeps saying, go higher, go higher.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Age karo.
Mm-hmm.
Go higher, go further. Mm-hmm. He said, well, the best thing you do is forget all Dharma and surrender to Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya said, what? That's external.
Mm-hmm.
And he himself spoke it. So then finally he said, oh, Braj Bhakti, Dasya Bhakti. Oh, that's something. And then Dasya Bhakti. So really what we want to emphasize is Sarvadharma Pratyaja, because that where that Gita ends, that's where Bhagavatam begins.
Mm-hmm.
Dharma Prochitikai Tavotra. All this Varnashram Dharma and all these Varna Dharma, you're talking about Varna Dharma and Ashram Dharma, it's all cheating. Because it's all entangled with karma and gyan. If you do your Varna Dharma as a Kshatriya, you're cheating because you die in a battlefield and you go to Swarga so you can enjoy. Or if you win, you enjoy. That's what's all said there in the Gita. If you conquer, then you can enjoy the spoils of war. And he says, what's the value? He's like, why can I enjoy? All my friends will be, all my grandfather and cousin brothers will be dead. Who's to enjoy with? What's the party with nobody there?
Right.
And then if I die, then what's happened to my wife? And so these are all karmic fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And so Krishna's ultimate instruction, you have to see what the final teaching is. Yes. That's what I told, I don't know if you were here, I told so many Indians, I quote the Bhagavad Gita, the fifth or sixth chapter. I'm doing my karma.
I know.
You know, karma's tu phalam or whatever.
They don't even know
that. No, they say like that. They say, no, Gita says, Krishna says in Gita, you should do your karma.
No,
like he told Arjuna. So I'm doing my karma. But they just cut the, you know, they take the egg off the back of the hen, but they don't want to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Ardha Kutanaya. Ardha Kutanaya, half a hen philosophy. They don't want to take the complete philosophy, but what's the Siddhanta? There's the foundation, there's the basis, there's the working principle, and then there's the conclusion. There's like what we call the hypothesis, and there's a thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. Right? So you make a thesis, and then someone argues an antithesis, and then the third person comes and makes the synthesis. So Krishna's doing that. He's arguing karma, then he's arguing yoga. And then Arjuna says, oh, this yoga is really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
Stand, look at the tip of your nose. He says, madhyabhruvam, or nasik shesham, or whatever. It says, stare at the tip of your nose, nasik shesham, or madhyabhruvam. Fix your attention in the middle of your eyebrows in the trikuta chakra, or agya chakra. And then Arjuna says, oh, this is really hard to do. And he says, oh, well, let's try to do something. And then think of me, always think of me, and do your duty. Fight and think of me. Okay, I'll try to do that. Tasmart Saveshu Kaleshu Mamanushu Maryujincha. But then ultimately Krishna says, actually forget all about this stuff. Just become my, love me. That's all. Manmanabhav Madhbhakto. Just think of me. Don't do anything else. He didn't say, his final thing, he said twice in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter and 18th chapter, the same idea, Manmanabhav Madhbhakto. Give up all these things. Just think of me, become my devotee, and worship me, boss. Finish. But in the 8th chapter, I think the 8th chapter, he's saying, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mamanushmara. He said, fight and think of me. Mamanushmara. Remember me and fight, Yudhya. Then as it progresses, later to the 9th chapter, and then finally 18th, it repeated again.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't even say about anything about fighting. He just says, become my lover. Priyosime. Become my Priya.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you heard that lecture about... Were you there at Bharati's house when I gave a lecture on Bhagavad Gita, Priyaji and the Bhagavad Gita? Oh, that was quite interesting. Maybe on that, tape in February. That's February?
No,
must have been February.
It was December and it came before the second lecture.
Oh. Yeah, maybe it's in January lecture then. It's called Priyaji and Gita.
Yeah, the one,
Patel
Prabhu gave me the copy. I heard that.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't there. But you're talking about Radha
when
he's present
in the Bible. Yeah, there's about 12 verses where Krishna speaks the word Priya. Priyosime, Priyosime. And Priya means Radharani, Priyaji. Priyatam. Radhan Sham. Priyaji is Radharani and Priyatam is Krishna. So Priyatam is remembering Priyaji because he met her in the battlefield previously when he was 50 years old. Now he's 90 or something. So he met her. He was there in the same place, so that place became an Udipan, a stimulant. The field, the trees, the river. It's remembered Radharani. It's like you go in your son's room and you see some object connected to your son, you remember your son. See his shoes, see his tennis racket. Go in the garage and say, oh, there's his bicycle. Now he's more interested in girls than bicycles. Now he's getting married and he's going to have a baby car, carriage, pushing a baby carriage. And no more riding his 10-speed bicycle. And I'm going to be a grandmother and I'm going to get so enamored. I remember Gopal Krishnaji told Sudama, when his sons are having children, his two sons, he said, listen, Sudama, Make sure you don't get attached to your grandchildren. Your attachment should be for Krishna. Sudama told me that. Because it's natural, at least in Indian households, for the mother and father to become attached to their grandchildren.
That's a
never-ending
cycle.
Yeah, it's called samsara. A never-ending cycle. So we have to keep pull out someday. So what point?
In the same Avanti Brahma conversation here, the thing is text 24, it says, chapter 23 stuff, says one who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, and it also says that does not share and does not even enjoy the wealth himself. So I thought we're not supposed to enjoy. We're not supposed to be the enjoyers. Why does it use that word? That even if you don't enjoy your wealth himself, then he's, you know, then you're not doing the right thing. If you have all this wealth and not enjoying it, I'm not sure why they're using the word enjoy.
Well, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, He's not saying that everyone has to be a... He's saying in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, be thou happy by the performance of this yajna, because it will bestow upon you all desirable things. By working in cooperation with the devas, mankind, by working in cooperation with the devas and performing yajna, which will... The yajna fall is... They eat the results of the yajna, then the demigods are happy. Then you'll get all desirable things, Krishna says in Gita. Yajna book, you'll enjoy the results of the sacrifice. So Krishna is not denying enjoyment to the living entity. We have senses, and we have a body, and we have senses. He's not denying that. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, book Ramya Katapasam. But the living entities are also part and parcel of Krishna. So they also have the tendency to enjoy. So Krishna doesn't want everybody to just eat one chickpea a day. And wear a rag, wear a burlap sack. According to our position, we can enjoy Ishavasya Vedam Sarvam Yatkin Jagat Yam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Bunjita Magriha Kasya Swidanam. He says in Isopanishad, one should recognize and understand that everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. But human beings are entitled to accept their quota. So a king, if you look at the Pandavas is described very minutely. At least for our edification, it's described a lot in Mahabharata, but very, very nicely in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. There's a chapter about the Pandavas. and describes how lavishly they were enjoying. They were kings. They had thousands of servants and gold and crystal and everything. But they weren't attached. And as soon as Krishna left the planet, they just took a kamandalu and went to the Himalayas. They didn't even take a bangle with it. Draupadi didn't even take a bangle. Because they only maintained all that wealth because they were Kshatriyas, and that was just the signs and symbols of royalty. And they were accepting it all for the service of Krishna. So that even Yudhisthira one time prayed when they were suffering. He said, "Please, Krishna, bless us with opulence, so that people understand that devotees don't become niggardly. That people won't be afraid to worship you." I said, "Well, these people are Kshatriyas, and they don't even get one village to rule. They get stuck in the forest for 14 years, and Krishna's their friend. But what good is it? We don't want to hang up, be associated with this Krishna." So he was even praying like that before they reinstated in their kingdom. So someone might think, well, he's a sense enjoyer. He wants to just enjoy luxury and royal life. But no, he wanted to establish the preeminence of Krishna worship and the superiority of Krishna as a topmost form of Godhead, that his worshippers aren't beggars and they're not slovenly and niggardly dressed. So therefore, according to our position, like a Brahmin, Brahmins are supposed to live austere lives. Samadhamas tapasho cham shantiraja mevita gyana vigyanam astikam brahma karma sambhavajam. The Brahmin's lifestyle is outlined in the Shastras, the Dharma Shastras, and also Gita is summarizing it. Samadhamas tapasho cham shantiraja mevita, that they should be self-controlled and simple and clean and pure and religious and live a very simple life. So that's what they're entitled to. But their wealth, the wealth and opulence of a Brahmin is his knowledge. His knowledge and his detachment, that's his opulence. And of course he's peaceful, because he's sattvic. Mm-hmm. But a king, he has another kind of wealth. So everyone is entitled to enjoy their wealth and enjoy their body and the facility of this material world per the religious shastras and per their varna. Whatever varna or ashram they're in, they're allowed a certain facility of enjoyment. This is the beauty of the Vedic paradigm, that everyone can live a healthy, fruitful life, healthy, prosperous, happy, satisfying life, at the same time work for liberation. The goal of the Vedic culture is mukti. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Of course, prema is something that's introduced by Lord Chaitanya as a fifth goal. Prema pumartha mahan. That this is a prema pumartha mahan, a maha chatur purusharta. And generally the desirable goals for human beings are four, which we mentioned, but he introduced a fifth one, and this is the best thing, because ultimately whatever we strive for, whatever we try to attain, is ultimately to attain love, because love is the most satisfying experience. And if one has that, then he has everything, whether he has dharma or artha or kama or moksha, whatever. Without love, it's all meaningless. So prema, Krishna prema, is the highest goal of life. And Lord Chaitanya taught that. And when one has that prema, attains that prema, that he doesn't care for the other four things. If he has no clothes and no house and no art and no wealth and no position and no prestige and no liberation and no moksha or anything, he doesn't matter. Because he has the greatest inner wealth of Krishna's loving embrace. So this verse is, I don't know the context of the whole chapter of what's being discussed there, whether he's summarizing varna, different varnas or whatever, but that's the basic principle, that everyone, it's not that everyone's supposed to be yogi. Kings are supposed to live like kings, but religious kings. Brahmins are supposed to live like Brahmins, religious Brahmins. God-fearing kings, Maharaj Parikshit, Prita Maharaj Parikshit, Yudhisthira, they were kings. They had everything, the best of everything, everything money could buy. Emperor of the entire earth planet, seven continents, or whatever it is, five oceans. But yet they were devotees, pure devotees. Pandavas are pure devotees. So this is what they're saying there.
It's easy to get when we're not in nishtha and we're not stabilized in our we're still struggling with.
Yeah, well, sense objects are bewildering.
Yeah.
They're alluring and they're bewildering, and so that's why we have to always hear and chant about Krishna to keep our consciousness elevated, just like a helium balloon. If you take out the helium, it falls on the ground. Goodyear blimp will go bloop. A Goodyear blimp will go bloop if you take out the helium. But so our consciousness, if you take out the hearing and chanting, then it bloops. It's called bloop. Bloop. You come back down on the ground and get in the mud again. The pure consciousness mixes up in the mud and becomes dirty. So the main thing is, as Krishna teaches in the Gita, non-attachment. Perform your duty without attachment. Depend on Krishna for the results. It's not like, there's a program in Vrindavan, but if I can't write, go there in my Rolls Royce, then I won't go. So that means one's attached to the comfortable conveyance. But if he's more attached to the hearing and chanting or Hari Katha or Sada Sangha, then he'll walk there or take a bullet cart or a third class train or anything, because he's not attached to the body. If things come, that's nice. I use them for Krishna. If they don't come, that's nice. Like Shanari Krishna, either way. It's called Stita D. He's not moving. He's unmoving. Because they say the soul is immovable. It's in the second chapter of the Gita. The soul is immovable. It never moves. It's always existing. It's always conscious. Death doesn't even, never exists. The soul is eternally existing. Just like consciousness is always existing. Even when we're so-called sleeping or unconscious, we're also conscious. Because our external senses cease to work, but our internal senses are working, because we're always existing. That's why if you have a deep sleep, there's four states of consciousness. There's, what is it? I forget the technical terms. Swapna, Turiya, Jagran. Jagran is a waking state. Jagran, Swapna, dreaming, and then deep sleep is some other thing, and then Turiya is a fourth state. But these are all states of consciousness. So when you have deep sleep and you don't remember any dream, when you wake up and say, I feel very well rested. I had a really deep sleep. I rested very nicely. Do you have any dreams? Or no, I just rested like a log. So that's called a Turiya state. So you're conscious. You're conscious that I, the conscious observer, was merged in ignorance. I totally merge. I'm the observer. I'm the conscious. So conscious, even though when you're totally unconscious in deep slumber, consciousness is there. So it's really, although we say, oh, he's unconscious, he's sleeping, he's not unconscious. If you're unconscious, you'd be, out of his body. Mm. Consciousness is always working and moving the body. Sometimes it's acting through the external senses or the internal senses. Actually, consciousness is always working through the mind. Because even when you're dreaming, you're seeing, and you're talking, and you're touching, and you're eating, everything's going on. So all the senses are there, but they're only acting on the subtle platform, the subtle senses. It's all acting, the consciousness is only interplaying with the mind, it's not combining the mind with the external senses. It's a very interesting phenomenon when you think about it. You say, oh, I saw you in the dream. How you saw me? Your eyes were closed. So who is the seer? Is the eye the seer, or the Atma is the seer?
Yeah,
the Atma is the seer. The eye is a piece of glass. The eye is only a magnifying agent. And then the mirror, the mind is, which the image is projected on, is only a mirror. It's like a screen. It's reflected upside down also, and backwards. Two images, the eye goes like this. So then you're watching the screen. So who's seeing? Is the screen seeing the movie, or you're seeing the movie? The Atma is seeing. So when you're awake or you're asleep, the Atma is Atma Drishti, the Atma is the seer.
The Atma is still conscious, waking or sleeping.
Consciousness is the Atma. The Atma is a conscious unit. Mm-hmm. Eternal conscious unit. Bhikshu Gita.
Yes. So if you say that these people are the cause of...
There's a whole section there.
Cause of my... Yeah, what happiness...
There's many, many verses. We discussed that. We had a class on that.
You
did? Yeah. I read that. Maybe it's on February lecture. All those 8 or 9 verses I read one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But anyway, it's a whole discussion, and the ultimate answer is that I am the cause of my distress. It's not my astrology. It's not my astrology chart. It's not the stars. It's not the planets. It's not my relatives. It's not my bad karma. It's not God. It's not anybody.
No, or my question is that your karma too? Like when people try to cheat you, or when people try, is that your karma too?
It depends. If you're initiated, like we were discussing it yesterday, that it says Diksha Kali Aprakritavastu. Chaitanya is telling Sanatana Goswami that at the time of Diksha, then the devotee's body becomes Aprakrita, becomes transcendental. So whatever happens to a devotee is the mercy of Krishna. Distress or happiness is not the result of karma. Of course, most devotees don't believe that, but that's what the Shastras say. And then sometimes they say, well, that only applies if you're a pure devotee. Sometimes I hear people say like this, only if you're a pure devotee, that whatever happens to you is Krishna's mercy. But so when a pure devotee gets sick, and that's Krishna's mercy, but when a newly initiated devotee gets sick, that's not Krishna's mercy. People say like that. But that is not what the Shastras say. So you're asking if people come and try to cheat you, and I can say if you're not a devotee, then it's your karma. Because everything's karma. Suffering of the body and suffering of the mind, reward or punishment, blessings or curses or happiness or sickness, it's all due to karma. It's all karma fall. The body is made of karma. The body is generated by karma. And the body pushes forward by karma. So because of it's all suffering the reactions of our last life's good or bad activities. We suffer and joy in this life. When one comes under the shelter of Guru and takes Diksha, then he's moving under a different control. Mm-hmm. That's what we were saying just yesterday to this devotee here, that astrologers have a difficult time pinpointing the life of a devotee because they can't understand the hand of Krishna. They read the chart and say, okay, you'll live to be 37. And Krishna says, oh, really? And he lives to be 102. The devotees, this is actually our experience, and this is actually the philosophy, and it depends on us to accept it. So at that point, when one surrenders the Guru and takes Diksha, then there's no more karma for him. As long as he's following the four principles and serving Guru, then that's it. And whatever little residual thing is there, then that's all dissolved by the practice of bhakti. And then anything that's coming to him, he thinks of it, whatever happens to him, positive or negative, or blessing or curse or whatever, that's Krishna sending it. So that's why we have this term, oh, this is Krishna's mercy. But generally we say it's Krishna's mercy when we get the Mahaplate. But when we're out all day in Sankirtan and we come home and all the prasad got gobbled up and there's nothing left, not a crumb left to eat, then we think, oh, this is not Krishna's mercy. those lousy devotees, they didn't save anything. And I'm out all day just turning books. I collected $200 at the temple. And then our ego gets involved. I mean, I'm raising the money to maintain this temple. And I collected $200 of my hard work and distributed 20 Bhagavatams at the airport. And I come back here, I can't get a grain of rice. And what is this? You know, this is not Krishna's mercy. So, this is really mercy. This is the prasad. This is the real prasad. Prasad means mercy, Krishna's mercy. This is the ordinary person, the Avanti Brahman. This is Bhiksha Gita. He's, because he lost all his wealth and now he's taken sannyas, he's an avadut. So these are the realizations. He's speaking his mind. And very, very few people, only in this Kinchin Sadhu of that caliber, will have such an understanding. But the basic operating principle of everyone in the world is that they're operating on their karma. And he himself is in the midst of his karma. Because he was such a miser that he got the karmic reaction that his family ripped him off. So that was his karma. So even though he's saying all this, but he himself is a victim of his own karma, which has led him to become an avadut. Now as an avadhuta, he's become very philosophical, and he's just speaking his mind and revealing his mind, how he's realizing step by step what is the actual situation. He's revealing his mind, how he himself has deliberated. This is a Muni. A Muni is thoughtful, and he deliberates on reality and comes to some... This is the positive side of mental speculation. Mental speculation, or you can say philosophical speculation, is acceptable and permissible as long as it leads one to God and leads one to surrendering to God and deeper understanding of God. But a philosophical speculation leads you to... increases your doubt or makes you an atheist, then of course it's prohibited. Although sometimes they include that in one of the regular principles. No, what is it, no gambling and no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication. Sometimes they say no mental speculation. They say like that. I never read anywhere, but they throw this thing in there. Well, no mental speculation. Well, come on, then you might as well, you know, cut your head off. Because every time you chant japa, you're speculating. Well, what about this and what about that? And I think I can this and I think I can that. So as long as we have a mind, we'll be speculating. 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 But that is an aspect of philosophy that's permissible. So this is what the Avanti Brahman is doing. It's called Bhikshu Gita. It's the song of the beggar. The beggar's song. And he's revealing what he's understood by his deep thinking. In his destitute position, often one gets realizations when he suffers. When he enjoys, he's intoxicated, can't see anything. He's all right. When he suffers, he gets really thoughtful because there's nothing to do but suffer. He's denied all sense input, and all sense pleasure has been denied to him due to some bad karma. So now all he's left with is the company of his own mind. No food, no friends, no money, no house, nothing. So all he has is his mind and his thinking process. So in states of suffering, then he can possibly, if he's philosophical, can think, oh, how did this happen? And where did everybody go? And where's all my money? And what happened to me? And sometimes you get some realizations, if you're lucky.
Does the visible or pleasurable reactions of karma ultimately act on false ego and not upon the body, which is composed of dead matter, and not upon the soul, which has nothing to do with matter? So then it's actually the false ego that is actually making us think that we're miserable or happy.
Yeah, it's just light pieces, different color light dancing on a silver screen. The silver screen is the ego, and then the light is just the sense input. That's like the movie. The movie is just light, different color light, playing on the screen, and you think, oh, this guy is a hero, and this guy's a heroine, and this guy shot that guy, and this guy made love with this guy, and now this is a girl, whatever. But it's like that. The ego is just that screen, and the light is light projecting on the screen. But we say, this screen is me.
Well, doing good things or bad things, people question you. That, oh, then you know you have to do good things in life and do good karma and be good to people and such and such. But then, if karma is actually just playing on the false ego, then
It plays there, but it also is not just a phantasmagoria. It registers and it carries you over into your next body. Due to our karmic activities and the arrangement of demigods, we get a particular material body. Mm-hmm. So it's not just an insignificant play of light on a screen. It's actually real things and real reactions that the soul has to suffer and enjoy as long as he's embodied. So the idea is that we don't really, a devotee doesn't so much care about all these things. Mm-hmm. All these different Artha Shastras and Dharma Shastras. He tries to adjust himself correctly with the will of Krishna directly. Mm-hmm. Because these Dharma Shastras, they are simply different dictations and rules and regulations to appease various demigods who are like the ministers of the material world, and they can give particular good things if you appease them and satisfy them. But the devotee doesn't care about that. And moreover, it's also told in the Shastra that when one surrenders to Krishna, he's a prime minister, Pradhan Mantri. And the demigods become rather pleased and said in the same 11th canto that they actually work cooperatively to assist the devotee. The demigods work cooperatively to assist the pure devotee in his execution of Krishna's will. So they become allies of the pure devotee, and we don't even have to take any second consideration about them. And doing good, I mean, our definition of good, at Lord Chaitanya, he says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, good and bad are all just illusion. There's no such thing as good or bad. It's only Krishna. So our conception of good, what is good? Good is to remind people of Krishna. And where they can, where of course they make discrimination, this is the madhyam. Madhyam is an agent of good, goodness, whereas nuttam is just, he's absorbed in his own samadhi. But a madhyam is actually moving in the world. So he makes discrimination and gives good where good can be given and avoids those that are evil. And he makes friends with devotees and he serves and loves the Lord. So we try to do good things in this world, but it's not good really, it's all bad. Because whatever good things you do, whatever punya you do, you have to take another body. Like I was once joking, I said, in the West they have these Christians, they dig a hole and they put the body inside the hole. And that's how they take care of the dead. Parsis, they throw the body in a grave. I mean, they throw the body in a pile and the vultures come and eat it. That's Parsis. They don't bury and they don't burn. And then Hindus, they burn. And then there's different ways they dispose of the bodies. So the Christians, they bury the body, then they make some stone. And they make some tombstone. And they say, John Doe, here lies John Doe. So I was thinking that, you know, that if they could make a stone for me, they could say, he meant well, but he went to hell. He meant well, but he went to hell. Because this is the whole concept of material do-gooders, that they try to do good, but they go to hell. They try to be a nice guy and pay your taxes and pay your rotary fees and send your kid to the Little League and go to the PTA meetings and be a good Girl Scout and buy cookies every year. And they think this is being good and, you know, don't run over dogs in the street and don't curse your neighbors too much. And then that's like good, but that's not good. That's also bad. It's not only bad, it's very bad. Because you take another birth and your so-called goodness and your claim to fame of being a good person, you kill so many animals and birds and fish, and you become a cockroach in your next life. So what's good about that? To be existing in the crown of creation, in the topmost form of life, human being, and then descending to a cockroach body, is quite a bad thing. It's not a very good thing. So he meant well, but he went to hell. Because if you could say, do you think, now you're a human being, do you think if you're living in a cockroach body that would be like hell? You say, yes, that would be hell. Like Prabhupada used to make a story, he'd say, yes, you go in these big skyscrapers in New York, and you walk in the lobby, and above the elevator, there's some elevator there, 50 stories, there's a big painting or a photograph of the owner of the building, or the builder of the building, John D. Rockefeller, Rockefeller Plaza, or whatever, these big buildings. And this is John D. Rockefeller. Prabhupada says, yes, they make these big, big buildings, and they put their pictures in the hall, in the lobby, but they're actually a cockroach in the commode. Commode means bathroom. He said, their pictures in the lobby, but actually the man himself has become a cockroach in the commode. So devotees are very poetic. They're coveys, some other qualities. So Prabhupada was the best of poets. Cockroach in the commode. So you have your picture there, more than life size, and lobby of the skyscraper building, as Prabhupada used to say. Skyscraper. We say skyscraper. But he said, oh, I saw so many skyscraper buildings. Prabhupada had some very special ways of saying English words. He certainly was a master of English writing, and speaking also was superb, unrivaled.
Then there in the next next shloka about tridanda and it says jiva danda.
That's in the purport.
Yeah,
mana, vakya, kaya.
Yeah.
Tridanda, the Vaishnava sannyasi,
right,
he takes three, it's called tridandi.
Tridandi
sannyasi, mana, vakya, kaya. Kaya means the body, and vakya means the voice, and mana means the mind.
Mind, body.
So this is three.
Yeah.
So in the Ramanuja Sampradaya and Vishnu Sampradaya, they all take three, tridanda. Now, what they say, and they don't usually wrap it in a cloth, they just have some bamboo poles and they wrap some little strings around the bamboo and you just see the bamboo poles. But on the top of that, they have a little thing like this. There's three long poles that are usually, at least in Gaudiya line, they're the same size as the sannyasi. So there are three poles, vertical poles like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the top, there's called the jiva danda. And the jiva, sometimes they say the jiva is as big as this, as you put your finger like that. Of course, the jiva is 1/10,000 tip of a hair, but anyway. They just say like this. This is how they make it. When they make the jiva danda, they put like this on bamboo. They take it like this on green bamboo, and then they put it in a fire and they bend it. And it bends. So if you ever see someone's danda, in that has something like this. Even the Shankars have like a little chopper on the top. They have ek danda and they have a little chopper. You ever see the Mayavadi sannyasis?
Mm-hmm.
They have ek danda, one danda, Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have a little chopper. It's like a little hatchet, you know, Parasaram.
Mm-hmm.
Chopper on a piece on the top. So they have this stick there, Vaishnava, all Vaishnavas, and that's called a jiva. Never ever said jiva. The jiva is engaging as kayo, mana, and bhakya in the service of Vishnu or Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bhakti Santa Saraswati, He went so far that as fourth danda. So when he was very revolutionary and innovative in everything he did practically. But he took that danda and the three dandas, he added another one. So now there's four dandas. The jiva, there's a kaya, mana, vakya, then four equal length vertical dandas. And that fourth one's called a jiva. Then still there's one on the top, so that's a fifth one in one sense. That little one, that represents this jiva bowed down in humility and humble submission. He humbly submits because it's like this. You know, like when you bend down, the other ones are straight. It's shaped like a C, like letter C. So it's like bend down, like this, right? It's like that. The jiva humbly submits all the activities of his body, mind, and words in the service of Krishna. So this is a unique introduction to the concept of danda, chaturdanda. Nevertheless, the Gaudiya math, ISKCON sannyasis are called Tridandi Bhikshu. Tridandi Bhikshu Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj. Tridandi Bhikshu, whatever, you know, so and so, whatever. We don't have so many bhaktis, but usually have these bhakti titles. In Gaudiya math, they all have bhakti titles. Bhakti Vedant, Bhakti this, Bhakti that. Bhakti Pramod, Bhakti Vaibhav. Nowadays, some of these kind of sannyasis are getting bhakti titles. Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami and this and that. But probably didn't do it very much. In fact, I think all he did was one. Charu Das, he gave the name Bhakti Charu Swami. Bhakti Charu Swami. Maybe, yeah, I think that's it. No, but he also had another sannyasi, Punjabi guy, Bhakti Chaitanya. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, I don't know where he is, but he was from Punjab.
Alright, now I feel that I'm being in a very sattvic mode as far as my exercising, eating, sleeping, everything. But a month goes by and then that's slipping again. So how do you get into that nishtha state? Like very, really
the thing is, practice makes perfect. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Right.
These are old cliches, but they apply.
Mm-hmm.
The baby falls on his bum bum so many times, then after some time he's running the Olympics, you know, in the 100-yard dash, and he usually doesn't fall on his bum bum when he's running the 100-yard dash. But if you look back, you take back the clock and show some movies, home movies of, like, you know, a guy that won 3 gold medals in the World Olympics. You see, look, this is a guy, and the guy's boom. falling on his bum bum. So, you know, we don't become Olympic champions overnight. So slow and steady wins the race. It's a matter of purification. As we become more pure, we become more steady. Krishna tells that in the Bhagavad Gita. Yesham tvantangutam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandvam hanirmukta bhajanti mam dridavrata. Bhajanti mam dridavrata. Dridavrata, to have strong bhajan, it is a result of purity of heart. Yesham tvantangutam papam jananam punyakarmanam. Punya karma, when we become punya, we become pure, punati. Then we become steady. So as we become more pure, we become more steady. It's like this. So if you want to become steady fast, then you have to do less Surya Namaskars and more Radha Krishna Namaskars. More japa. Because this is the way, this is the way to quickly become steady. Is the more quickly you become pure, the more quickly you become steady. And the best way to become pure is to chant the Maha Mantra and hear Hari Katha from advanced Vaishnavas. There's no better means to purification than sadhusanga, sadhusanga, sarvashastra hoy, lava mantra, sadhusanga, sarvasiddhi hoy. So associate with sadhus because they all chant Hare Krishna and they'll glorify Krishna. And on your own, you chant Hare Krishna and you glorify Krishna. So basically the means of perfection, the quickest and most powerful means of perfection is to glorify Krishna. Glorify Krishna yourself or hear others glorify Krishna. Or glorify Krishna with others that are glorifying Krishna. So when the pure devotees are chanting in kirtan, then you chant along with them. So everyone's glorifying Krishna, then it's called Sankirtan. Samyak kirtan, all together glorifying. Kirti means glories.